Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. We've got a lot of material to cover today, as usual. I want to get as much of it as possible into our broadcast hour, including discussion and updates on the coronavirus outbreak and fears of a coming deadly worldwide pandemic. But I'll get to that later in the program. To start off, let's go over the latest political developments. These include some highlights from the latest Democratic presidential debate. Yes, there was another one last week. The left-wing dominated mainstream media's panic about Donald Trump's prospect for re-election and returning to peddling yet again their Trump-Russia collusion hoax, along with a closer look at the newest entrant to the Democratic presidential race, Mike Bloomberg. As you know, this past week we had yet another Democratic presidential debate, this one featuring the new entrant, former New York City mayor and multi-billionaire Mike Bloomberg, who's already spent something like $500 million on slick advertising saturating the airwaves. I, for one, believe Bloomberg has a good chance of getting the Democratic Party's nomination, despite the facts that he supposedly fared badly in his first debate appearance last week, and that the multimillionaire socialist hypocrite crazy Bernie Sanders is currently the front runner among the numerous leftists vying for the nomination. You may also know that he was the winner the caucuses, Democratic caucus in Nevada, with the second place going to Joe Biden, a distant second, and not too far behind him was Pete Buttigieg. I guess I'm going to pronounce it Buttigieg. The others, Elizabeth Warren, Klobuchar, and I believe the other billionaire, the guy's name might slip me at the moment, but Steyer, yeah, Tom Steyer, didn't do very well there. For many years now, we've been reading, seeing, and hearing about Bloomberg while he was mayor of New York City, and afterward, as his fabulous fortune has grown to an estimated $60-plus billion today. His significant business interests in and frequent defense of communist China and his leftist and globalist views. He's been a Republican, at least in name. He's been called a moderate Republican, but a lot of left-wing views for a Republican, and an independent and now a Democrat. Bloomberg is also a longtime Trump opponent who continues to attack Trump regularly in the media and in his campaign advertising. Here's a portion of an interview NBC News did with Bloomberg February 3 on the eve of Trump's impeachment acquittal in the U.S. Senate. Play soundbite one, please.
Over the weekend, this tiff with President Trump seemed to be escalating with him calling you some things in your campaign, calling him a pathological liar, these dueling Super Bowl ads. Do you think President Trump at this point is scared of the prospect of running against you?
Well, I think there's no question that he is worried about me because otherwise he wouldn't respond. He'd focus his attentions on other candidates that he would not want to run against. Donald doesn't want to run against me because he knows I know what he's done. I know how to take him on. I've taken him on guns and on coal and on a number of other things, and every time I've beaten him. But I'm not focusing on what Donald Trump's doing. I'm trying to tell the public what I did and what I would do, and not getting into a silly contest. He's doing this because he can't run on his record. That's his problem.
A lot of the primary voters that we're talking to are feeling rather dismayed at the moment about the way that the impeachment trial is wrapping up, the president facing almost certain acquittal, no witnesses, no evidence. What is your message to Americans who are concerned about a lack of accountability going forward for the president?
Well, it's a disgrace. I don't think there's any question about that, but I think the whole Republican Party is contributing to this. It's not just Donald Trump. He may have pressured them to not impeach him and not to have any more witnesses. But if there's more information that can come out, the first thing everybody should do is get it out. This is America. and we should be able to face the facts, and then you can make your decisions. I made my decision. I don't like impeachment, but I thought there was so much evidence we really had to do it. I said, I'm not a senator, but if I was, I would vote to convict, and let's get on with it. It's obvious, it seems obvious, that they're going to let him off the hook without doing anything, and then the public will have its chance on November 3rd.
Yes, this is America. Now, the House Intelligence Committee, dominated by Democrats, Adam Schiff and his buddy there, Mr. Nadler, I believe, they would not let Republicans call witnesses, called only their witnesses, and limited Republican cross-examination, as I understand it, only presented what they wanted to present. That's a disgrace, I guess, huh? No, that's what was great. And then supposedly when it's all wrapped up, we go to the Senate. Oh, no. Got to have more witnesses. Got to have more testimony, on and on and on. Well, anyway, you can make your own decision about that. Bloomberg's first appearance on the debate stage, February 20 in Las Vegas, is widely received in the media to have gone badly for him. Let's listen to a clip from the debate aired all over the media where Elizabeth Warren comes out swinging against Bloomberg. Please play soundbite 2.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Democrats are not going to win if we have a nominee who has a history of hiding his tax returns, of harassing women, and of supporting racist policies like redlining and stop and frisk. Look, I'll support whoever the Democratic nominee is. But understand this. Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another. This country has worked for the rich for a long time and left everyone else in the dirt. It is time to have a president who will be on the side of working families and be willing to get out there and fight for them. That is why I am in this race, and that is how I will beat Donald Trump.
Yes, the multimillionaire, I believe, Elizabeth Warren. She's done quite well for herself. Anyway, while many of the pundits claimed his performance in the debate was a disaster, Bloomberg is defiantly pushing ahead with his candidacy, and frankly, given his vast fortune and ability to buy votes virtually and delegates, along with the establishment's desire to replace Bernie Sanders as a leading Democrat's presidential candidate, I wouldn't be surprised if Bloomberg winds up with a nomination. I had read recently that there may still be a way to stop Sanders, who the media currently is claiming is just steaming ahead with his candidacy and leading strongly. I think that's very likely the case, but we'll have to see how things play out. There was also a lot of media talk and speculation recently about Bloomberg reportedly being in discussions with Hillary Clinton for her to serve as his vice president running mate, though both Bloomberg and Clinton have remained mum about such discussions. In the debate, Bloomberg denounced communism as unworkable, despite many of his political and economic views being decidedly to the left, and Bloomberg himself being described as a left-wing billionaire and globalist businessman. We'll look closer at his business interests in a few minutes, but first, here's some audio from a video put out by Americans for Tax Reform of an interview with the left-wing billionaire by the Globalist International Monetary Fund's chief, Christine Lagarde, in May 2018, in which Bloomberg says taxes are a good thing. Play soundbite 3, please.
Some people say, well, taxes are regressive, but in this case, yes, they are. That's the good thing about them, because the problem is in people that don't have a lot of money. And so higher taxes should have a bigger impact on their behavior and how they deal with themselves. So I listen to people saying, oh, we don't want to tax the poor. Well, we want the poor to live longer so that they can get an education and enjoy life. And that's why you do want to do exactly what a lot of people say you don't want to do. The question is, do you want to pander to those people or do you want to get them to live longer? And there's just no question. If you raise taxes on full sugary drinks, for example, they will drink less. And there's just no question that full sugar drinks are one of the major contributors to obesity, and obesity is one of the major contributors to heart disease and cancer and a variety of other things. So it's like saying, I don't want to stop using coal because coal miners will go out of work. Well, will lose their jobs. We have a lot of soldiers in the United States, in the U.S. Army, but we don't want to go start a war just to give them something to do. And that's exactly what you're saying when you say, well, let's keep coal killing people because we don't want coal miners to lose their jobs. The truth of the matter is there aren't very many coal miners left anyways, and we can find other things for them to do. But the comparison is a life or a job, or taxes or life. Which do you want to do? Take your poison.
So it's regressive. It is good. There are lots of tax experts in the room and fiscal experts, and I'm very pleased that they hear you say that. And they all say the two things in life which are absolutely certain. One is death, the other one is tax. So you use one to defer the other one.
That's correct.
Okay.
That is exactly right. It. Well said.
Well said. Bloomberg appears to be another climate change nut who has bragged in campaign ads about putting coal mines out of business, ostensibly for the good of the environment. Excuse me, but I have often read and heard it said that the U.S. is the Saudi Arabia of coal, which has long been a major source of energy around the world. In recent years, as I understand it, considerable strides have been made in reducing pollution from burning coal, and I'm sure we will be doing much more in the future toward making burning of coal for energy cleaner and environmentally friendly. I see no reason to end coal production and consumption as an energy source to placate environmental extremists. But apparently Bloomberg does, and believes he and other globalists will be able to find other jobs somehow for those working in the coal industry. I imagine there are quite a few, actually, the coal industry having been a major energy source for so long, but not a problem for Bloomberg. And now we may well have a Democratic presidential and vice presidential ticket this year with Mike Bloomberg and Hillary Clinton. Let's listen to a few excerpts of the left-wing establishment's darling Hillary Clinton's speeches in recent years to give you a better idea of how her views match up with Bloomberg's. Play soundbite four, please.
I think we know what we're up against. We do, don't we? Donald Trump has pledged to appoint Supreme Court justices who will overturn marriage equality. And if you read about the people that he says are the ones he's likely to appoint, he's not kidding. You can put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that. And he has lifted them up.
If you look at the map of the United States, there's all that red in the middle where Trump won. I win the coasts, I win, you know, Illinois and Minnesota, places like that. But what the map doesn't show you is that I won the places that represent two-thirds of America's gross domestic product. So I won the places that are optimistic, diverse, dynamic, moving forward, and his whole campaign, Make America Great Again, was looking backwards. You know, you didn't like black people getting rights, you don't like women, you know, getting jobs, you don't want to, you know, see that Indian American succeeding more than you are. Whatever your problem is, I'm going to solve it.
Your name doesn't come up much on any campaign except for Donald Trump's. Lock her up is still a big popular line.
I believe he knows he's an illegitimate president. He knows. He knows that there were a bunch of different reasons why the election turned out the way it did. And I take responsibility for those parts of it that I should. But, Jane, it was like applying for a job and getting 66 million letters of recommendation and losing to a corrupt human tornado. And so I know that he knows that this wasn't on the level. I don't know that we'll ever know everything that happened, but clearly we know a lot and are learning more every day, and history will probably sort it all out. So, of course, he's obsessed with me. And I believe that it's a guilty conscience in so much as he has a conscience.
And tonight it also appears that WikiLeaks has released transcripts of Hillary Clinton's paid speeches. Remember all the fuss about those? BuzzFeed News published lengthy excerpts this afternoon. And here are Hillary Clinton's comments to Banco Itaú, a former Brazilian bank. Quote, "My dream is a hemispheric common market with open trade and open borders. Sometime in the future, with energy that is as green and sustainable as we can get it, powering growth and opportunity for every person in the hemisphere."
Example, I'm the only candidate which has a policy about how to bring economic opportunity using clean, renewable energy as the key into coal country, because we're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business.
Sounds a lot similar to Bloomberg's views, doesn't it? From the beginning of Donald Trump's presidency, the media establishment has been pushing, without let up, the false narrative that Trump is somehow a Russian agent and conspired with Russia to steal the election from Hillary and threaten American security interests. All the while, the real evidence of Russian collusion is attributed to Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party, who paid for the infamous and completely uncorroborated Steele dossier, which was used to illegally obtain warrants to spy on Trump and his supporters, along with Bill and Hillary's infamous charitable foundation getting vast sums of money from individuals and organizations associated with the Russian government. You may be familiar with investigative journalist Peter Schweitzer's book and video called Clinton Cash, in which Schweitzer details many instances of corruption allegations about the Clintons' political influence peddling to foreign and domestic governments and entities. Here's a segment from that video regarding Russia gaining control of 20% of U.S. uranium production while Hillary Clinton was U.S. Secretary of State. The segment continues after an earlier segment in which Schweitzer reported on Bill Clinton helping his friend, Canadian businessman Frank Giustra, gain a lucrative uranium concession in Kazakhstan. Play sound by five, please.
See, the international uranium market is very competitive. The Kremlin sees dominance and control of the uranium market as a source of national power. Frank Giustra takes that uranium concession he got in Kazakhstan and puts it into a company in a so-called reverse merger, which was one way for a private company to go public to form something called Uranium One. It's a company traded on the stock market in Canada, and they start acquiring uranium concessions in places like Wyoming, Texas, New Mexico, and Utah. And by 2009, they have what is expected to be 50% of future uranium production in the United States. This gets the interest of Vladimir Putin and the Russian government. And in fact, there are State Department cables that were leaked through WikiLeaks, which show that Hillary was aware of the fact that the Russians took great care to try to dominate the international uranium market. Well, the Russians want to buy this asset, and they offer a 40% overprice on the share of the stock. And for this transaction to go through, it has to be approved by the U.S. federal government. Why? Because uranium is regarded as a critical industry in the United States.
After all, this is used for our civilian nuclear reactors and goes into nuclear weapons. So it goes before the federal government, where it needs to be signed off by a series of federal agencies, including the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton.
As Hillary Clinton is contemplating this, shareholders in Uranium One, including Frank Giustra, have sent more than $145 million to the Clinton Foundation. The chairman of that company at the precise time is a guy named Ian Telfer, who is also making donations to the Clinton Foundation, as is Frank Holmes, who is another major Uranium One shareholder. And Hillary Clinton, who has a record of opposing precisely these kinds of deals, comes out and says, you know what? I think this is a good deal. Let's let Vladimir Putin take control of what is now 20% of U.S. uranium production. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton are the only figures in American politics who are willing to do this deal and who could actually pull it off, because they had a reputation that runs so contrary to what they're doing. I mean, this is what the Clinton Foundation does, right? This is what they talk about politically, their support for human rights, their concerns about proliferation, their concerns about issues related to Russian aggression.
There's no doubt that when Putin came back in and said he was going to be president, that did change the relationship. We have to stand up to his bullying. And
what's so interesting when you consider this uranium deal are the actions of a small Canadian investment firm called Solida Capital. Solida Capital, in 2010, as this deal was going down, committed to give millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation, and they also sponsored a speech by Bill Clinton in Canada. Solida Capital is also the name of a wholly owned subsidiary of Rosatom. Who is Rosatom? Well, this is the government agency in Russia that controls their nuclear arsenal, that built nuclear reactors in Iran, and engages in nuclear technology exchanges with rogue countries like North Korea.
What this means, in essence, is that the Russian government, specifically Rosatom, was funneling money through a subsidiary directly to the Clinton Foundation. But the payday didn't end there. 4 months before Hillary Clinton's State Department would sign off on the Russian purchase of Uranium One, Bill Clinton got paid $500,000 to give a single speech in Moscow.
He was being paid by a firm called Renaissance Capital, which has a long history of association with Russian intelligence services. What makes this speech stand out is not only the timing of when he's being paid, but the amount that he's being paid. You see, the last time Bill Clinton gave a speech in Russia was 5 years earlier. At that time, he was paid about a one-third of what he was being paid this time.
Why is Russian control of 20% of U.S. uranium so troubling?
If you're in an era where nuclear weapons are a reality, where nuclear energy is an important component of energy production in the United States and increasingly around the world, control of uranium is absolutely crucial.
And unlike oil or natural gas can be found in so many places around the world, there are precious few places where you can find significant and large amounts of uranium that you can produce on a commercial scale. What we've essentially done is handed this precious resource to Vladimir Putin and the Russian government.
And wouldn't it be so great if Hillary were to be resurrected as Mike Bloomberg's vice presidential pick? Can you imagine if Donald Trump or some other prominent Republican had done this sort of thing? The media would absolutely be going berserk. But do you hear much, if at all, about all this stuff in the with the Clintons and so forth, Rosatom and all that, in the mainstream media? Not that I've ever seen. If it is mentioned, it's brushed over very quickly and pushed away. And just how did Bloomberg get so rich? Let's take a look at that. Now, Bloomberg is said to be, from what I read, a young guy. He was born on Valentine's. I mean, it was when he was young. He was born on Valentine's Day, 1942. Grew up in Medford, Massachusetts, small town near Boston. According to his website, he grew up in a middle-class family and was in the Boy Scouts. He graduated from Johns Hopkins University with an electrical engineering degree and earned an MBA from where else but Harvard. Then he went on to work on Wall Street. And he somehow landed a job at Salomon Brothers in New York City, where he spent supposedly countless hours counting out stocks and bonds in the bank's vault. His starting salary was only $9,000 a year, according to his website and an article about this that I read on the internet. And he eventually supposedly worked his way up the ranks and was named a partner in 1972. Suppose he did that all on his own? Maybe so. And eventually he was put in charge of running the firm's financial information technology division, which was supposedly viewed as a demotion, but he stuck it out for a few more years, then was cut loose when the firm was merged with a commodity trading firm, Fibro, I believe, in 1981. And he managed to get wind up with a $10 million severance payout, which he later applied to start his own business, a financial information technology company known as Bloomberg LP. You may have heard of Bloomberg News. In an article from New York Magazine in November 20, 2019, titled "Here's Why Mike Bloomberg is So Rich," by Josh Barrow, who was a former staff writer for Bloomberg News, as I understand it, he states, quote, "Mike Bloomberg, the other billionaire thinking about running for president, isn't just another billionaire. I don't just mean that because, unlike Tom Steyer, he actually held a major elected position. I mean Bloomberg is especially wealthy by billionaire standards. According to Forbes magazine estimates, he's the eighth richest person in America with a net worth of $53.4 billion. I understand now it's 60 plus, but anyway, making him 17 times wealthier than President Trump. And unlike Trump, he's a self-made millionaire." The author continues, quote, "A large majority of Bloomberg LP's $10 billion in annual revenue comes from Bloomberg terminal subscriptions. For a bit over $20,000 a year, you get either a physical device or computer software that provides access to a wealth of real-time financial market data. The terminal will tell you everything from interest rates on obscure bonds to the current utilization of oil storage tanks in Cushing, Oklahoma. Importantly, you also get access to instant Bloomberg messaging, which you can use to contact other terminal users. Frequently, traders need it to reach the people they trade with. This suite of services is considered valuable enough to enough financial professionals that there are over 300,000 terminal subscriptions around the world." And so you see the source of his fabulous wealth. Certainly, you got to give the man credit for doing something right here in terms of amassing this fantastic fortune, which seems to be getting bigger and bigger as the years go by. There's another article I came across in the Washington Post by Michael Cranish on January 1 of this year, titled "Bloomberg's Business in China Has Grown. That Could Create unprecedented Entanglements If He Is Elected President." The article begins, quote, "Mike Bloomberg was presiding over his inaugural Bloomberg New Economy Forum in Singapore in 2018 when, to the surprise of some in the audience, he gushed about one of China's top government officials. Vice President Wang Qishan was, quote, the most influential political figure in China and in the world, close quote, Bloomberg said, breaking from a prepared text that had said the keynote speaker was, quote, one of, close quote, the most influential. Bloomberg noted that he and Wang had first met at Bloomberg's home 15 years earlier when he was mayor of New York City and Wang was mayor of Beijing. And he praised the vice president for helping lead China, quote, through a period of extraordinary growth, close quote. Then in September, amid mass pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong and human rights activists decrying China's imprisonment of Muslim minorities, Bloomberg seemed to go out of his way to defend Beijing, saying in a televised interview that President Xi Jinping, quote, is not a dictator, close quote. Bloomberg said Xi has to satisfy his constituents or he's not going to survive, close quote. Pressed by the interviewer, Bloomberg said Xi, quote, has a constituent to respond to. They really are responsive, close quote. Cranish goes on to relate that, quote, the billionaire whose core business sells financial information to investors has led efforts since 2015 to make it easier for U.S. companies to trade in Chinese currency, a move embraced by China's largest banks. He expanded one of his company's financial indexes, which could steer $150 billion into China while earning his firm an undisclosed amount in fees. Close quote. All this is especially troubling since Bloomberg could be the Democratic candidate for president. And now, once again, the left's allies and the mainstream media establishment are carting out and dusting off their meme that Trump is a Russian agent, asset, spy, traitor. A few days ago, there was a story that U.S. intelligence was claiming Russia was attempting once again to influence the 2020 elections to get Trump reelected. All the while, there had been virtually no evidence to support this. But if you're one of the millions upon millions of dumbed-down followers of mainstream media, that doesn't seem to make any difference. Here's an audio clip from Fox's Tucker Carlson Tonight, February 21. just a couple of days ago about the Trump-Russia collusion hoax being revisited. Play soundbite six, please.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. The story of American decline is the story of an incompetent ruling class. You'll hear many self-serving explanations for it, but the truth is it's that simple. The people in charge inherited an industrial superpower with unchallenged military dominance. In a little more than a generation, they squandered all of it. In exchange for short-term profits, bigger vacation homes, cheaper household help, they wrecked what they did not build. They outsourced entire sectors of our economy to China. They imported a serf class to drive down wages, and they crippled the middle class while doing it. They ran up trillions in unpayable debt. They turned the finest universities in the world into a joke. They watched from their decadent little bubbles of affluence as families, faith, and public decency died in this country, and they laughed because they didn't care. How people this awful wound up in charge of a nation as great as ours is a question historians will have to answer, and they will someday. But at this point, it's clear the population has grown tired of it. Donald Trump's election is one clear sign of that. The rise of Bernie Sanders is another. The ruling class, in other words, is losing its grip on power, and they can feel it. They can smell it. It terrifies them. Their first response was denial. It always is. They retreated into fantasy. Why can't we just elect Joe Biden and make it 2009 again? Well, that didn't work. And when it didn't, they reverted to their governing instinct, which is authoritarianism. They stopped trying to convince the public of anything and instead decided to scare them. Fearful people are easier to control. You saw it on the front page of their newspaper this morning, the New York Times. Lawmakers are warning that Russia is meddling to reelect Trump, read the headline. Inside the story, there was nothing. No evidence, no detail, not even a coherent set of accusations. But it was enough to alert the morons on cable news that it was time to do their job, which is, now and always, to run interference for the people in charge. Now, remember, as you watch the following clip, that most of the people on television have no idea what they're saying, even as they're saying it. They're just reading the scripts that were written for them by some 23-year-old women's studies major from Wesleyan, someone who knows even less than they do. So as you watch, try not to judge them too harshly.
It's official. Russia has endorsed the re-election of President Donald Trump, who is trying desperately right now to keep that matter secret.
If the Russians are attacking our election processes and they're doing so to benefit Donald Trump, I think, frankly, the president welcomes it. He wants it.
So as bad as it is that the Russians are back at it, trying to help Trump get reelected, it's far worse that the president of the United States is trying to cover it up.
The president is a Russian operative. That sounds like the description of a bad Hollywood screenplay, but it is real. And it is Vladimir Putin's greatest achievement. This is one of those shocking news days, if you retain the capacity to be shocked, in the Trump era by the Trump regime, which might be better labeled the Trump-Putin regime.
The president of the United States has colluded with Vladimir Putin to steal an election. No, not the last one, though that one, but the next one, too. Be afraid, says Don Lemon. Be very afraid. Yet the public doesn't seem especially afraid. Maybe they've heard it before somewhere. Their lack of panic is deeply distressing to the Democratic Party, which is counting on another Red Scare sometime between now and November. So Brian Williams, trusty Brian Williams, stepped in to scold America for not being more terrified.
We begin tonight with sad word that funeral services are pending this evening. After the death of Outrage earlier today, Outrage officially died of exhaustion, though buoyed at the very end by the one bright spot, the realization that his close relative, Apathy, survives and is thriving.
Got that? Screw you, America. You ought to be falling for it a second time. How dare you? You can see the frustration on their faces. On the other hand, you'd think they might take the time to come up with a new hoax occasionally. Why can't they invent Argentine sappers once in a while or saboteurs from Malawi? Something new and interesting. But no, like a robot vacuum cleaner stuck carving circles under a chair, they're going to keep doing the same thing over and over and over till the batteries run out.
For those of us who support Trump, this kind of propaganda has no effect on us, especially since it's backed up with zero facts for substantiation. But how many millions of brainwashed minions of the American globalist leftist ruling class are swallowing it hook, line, and sinker? All right. Now let's hear some audio from the Alex Jones show last weekend, in which he interviews Mike Adams of the website naturalnews.com, who's been following the coronavirus outbreak. Since that show, there hasn't been a lot of new information about this outbreak, in my opinion, with the exception of reports of numerous new cases of infection occurring in South Korea, Iran, and elsewhere in the world. A World Health Organization official said yesterday there is still a chance to contain this mysterious and deadly illness before it becomes a worldwide pandemic. Let's hope so. Will you play soundbite 7, please?
Infowars.com is tomorrow's news. Today, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
All right, it's always great to have Max Keiser in studio with us, but I think part of it is he does his international RT show. It's very serious. And then he likes to blow off steam and have fun here on this show. But things are really, really serious. And on air and off air, he was agreeing that this coronavirus long-term threatens the global economy, and it's certainly causing big shakeups in China. But I wanted to get Mike Adams on because in the last month that we've been focused on the coronavirus, I have really tried to downplay how serious things could be because I don't want to overplay it. But I got to tell you, the response we've seen has been over the top. The government saying everything's okay out of one side of their mouth, but massive preparations on the other side really concerns me. And now we're seeing that indeed they were covering up the real numbers of people that were sick. And now we've got major scientific institutions and major medical institutions saying the reinfection is happening and people get even sicker in the reinfection because it looks like it's mutated. So something big's going on here. Absolutely, Xi Jinping is using this to clamp down on political dissidents and move into Taiwan, where their takeover has been unpopular. But there's something else going on. We know it's man-made. We know they've been covering up the origin of that. Now mainline news is saying it's man-made. So we've really been the cutting edge here with Mike Adams, another guest that we've had on the broadcast. Cruise ship coronavirus cases spike 30%. First death reported in Europe. Doctors warn of even deadlier coronavirus reinfection causing sudden heart attacks. Leading medical journal reports coronavirus highly contagious and more deadly than initially estimated. Bill Gates warns 10 million lives at risk as virus spreads to Africa, and Taiwan reports first death. China now censoring coronavirus critics in the U.S. We'll get more into that in a moment. China's disintegrating steel demand, property sales, traffic all approaching zero. I mean, if it is a hoax, it's the biggest hoax in history, but it is contagious. It is killing people. But I mean, are they over responding? Coronavirus could infect 60% of the global population if unchecked. You know, that's the London Guardian. Xi's early involvement in virus outbreak raises questions. To tame coronavirus, Mao-style social control blankets China. Did coronavirus originate in Chinese government laboratories? See, that's now in Reuters. It's now the Daily Mail. It's now in the German news. No handshakes. Viral outbreaks spook Asians. Places of worship. AP. Pets in China forced to wear bizarre makeshift masks made by owners amid fears they may catch deadly coronavirus. And there's just all taped up animals' faces looking completely dystopic. Mass hysteria? A hunt for clues in Hawaii after tourists couple falls ill with coronavirus. China desperate to stop coronavirus spread turns neighbor against neighbor. Avoid crowds over virus, Japan health minister warns. I mean, I got to go to Mike Adams and stop just reading all these headlines. Everything Mike said two, 3 weeks ago has now come true, okay? And we've been laying this out. So it's obviously big, but what is it? What's behind it? How bad is it going to get? Mike Adams, what's the latest? Tell us tomorrow's news today.
Well, thanks for having me on, Alex. I really appreciate your segments with Max Keiser there. I apologize. I can't bring that level of levity to this because, you know, I've just been diving into the coronavirus. But I'm glad, I'm really glad that we could have a little humor today because it's about to get really dark for America. So number one, first of all, in the last week, the CDC top person, the head of the CDC, Dr. Redfield, admitted that this was coming to America in the form of community outbreaks, and that it would return essentially year after year, kind of like the way the seasonal flu keeps coming back mutated. So you have the head of the CDC admitting that this is going to become endemic in the human population, and it's only a matter of time before it goes across America. The CDC.
That's right. I forgot he said that on Friday, and you wrote about it at naturalnews.com, but that's so huge. There's a whole new class of virus that's clearly made in a laboratory that they tell us is this whole new thing we've got to just deal with now.
Absolutely. And as you just mentioned, the reinfection of this is more fatal than the initial infection, because what happens is during the initial infection, your body is slow to respond, slow to build the antibodies. If you survive that, and currently we believe that maybe 83-85 out of 100 people survive that first infection, if you get reinfected, what happens is your body over responds with what's called a cytokine storm. And that, combined with the initial scarring of your lungs from the first infection, is causing sudden heart failure. And Alex, this, I believe, is what's behind those videos of people dropping dead on the streets, you know, where they die in 60 seconds and they just collapse. It's the second infection. It's the same virus. It's just that your body responds differently and you have sudden extreme heart failure and you're dead. You cannot be revived. It's over. So remember, I don't know if you've read reports about the Spanish flu in 1918. It wasn't the first wave that killed the, 50 million people around the world. It was the second wave. So even if we are lucky enough to survive the first wave of this, the second wave of infection could be even more devastating than the first. And by the way, I'm starting to get hints. I want to be careful. This is not confirmed yet, but we're seeing in the Asian media, we're seeing a lot of mentions of people who had been traveling to and from Hawaii later getting diagnosed in countries like Japan and Taiwan and Malaysia and so on. There seems to be some kind of link to Hawaii right now. Again, it's not confirmed. We're not aware of any outbreaks there. But if you think about the number of Asian people who visit Hawaii for tourism or business, you know, there are large Japanese-American communities in Hawaii and so on, then you begin to understand Hawaii makes sense as the first geographical place for this to really have sustained outbreaks in America. We hope it doesn't happen, but the evidence is sort of pointing in that direction. At the same time, right now in China, so many people are under quarantine or lockdown, it's now double the population of the entire United States of America, 760 million people under lockdown in China. And they're now starting to offer rewards if you narc on your feverish neighbor. So now this is full-blown communism, Alex, where it's like, here, we're going to pay you money. The state is going to pay you money to turn in your neighbor who has a fever or who's coughing or who just came from Wuhan and didn't tell anybody. So now we have this secret police culture where they're turning people against each other all across China. And on top of that, you want me to keep going? I've got more.
Okay. Yes, you've got the floor here. It just, I mean, clearly there's something big behind this. And you're right. They're using it as a clampdown. But there are people for real just dropping dead. And that's what these reports, you talked about this 2 weeks ago, but now major medical institutions are saying that's what's causing is total cardiac arrest.
So a piece I put together, by the way, I just published 15 minutes ago, a new piece that talks about how the coronavirus could alter the outcome of the 2020 election. We should probably get into that. Maybe you want to repost. It's up to you. But the Democrat cities, they rely on public transportation where you share common surfaces in subways and taxis and rail trains and, you know, public transportation, buses. Well, the coronavirus survives up to 9 days on a surface, viable. And also in liberal cities, you have sanctuary status, which means that once this gets into Mexico or other South American or Central American nations, you have people fleeing those nations who are infected. They're trying to run away from the pandemic. They're going to cross the U.S. border, and they're going to be drawn like magnets to the sanctuary cities like San Francisco, where we already have a feces problem there. We now have scientists confirming that this coronavirus spreads through human feces. Another confirmed case in Hong Kong where it was spread through the sewage lines in an apartment building.
All right, stay there. Let's start over then, because that's really the big news, that this could affect the 2020. Mike Adams is our guest here, Natural News. He's been on target. Like nobody else really breaking all this down. It's been in the medical journals. It's been out there, but they've been really suppressing those and make people cover it up. But now more and more scientists, more and more people in the U.S. government are coming out and saying, no, it is man-made. And it's a whole new class of viruses that they say is like the flu that'll just be mutating and bouncing around forever. So who knows how it really mutates later? Who knows what they've already
done with this virus in the laboratory, and now we're going to see it unfold for years. We have the headline. It's up at Infowars.com. Hope people will share it. It's also at naturalnews.com, where Mike first published it. Could the coronavirus pandemic drastically alter the 2020 elections? Democrat cities are the most likely outbreak hubs because of the rats, the feces, the needles, just the overall mental illness and filthiness everywhere. And they're giant destinations for people pouring out of the third world with all sorts of other diseases that also lower the immune system. Mike, lay it out for them.
Well, there are really two big risks. One set of risks works against the Democrats and the other against Trump. First, in terms of infections, the Democrat cities are the high-density areas that are most likely to spread these diseases. They have homelessness problems in places like Seattle, shared needles, filthy streets, feces running in the streets of San Francisco, bad public health policies. It's a disaster in many of these liberal cities. On top of that, again, you have shared public transportation. People don't typically own their own private cars. They share transportation. And these are sanctuary cities where infected migrants are likely to go to. On the other side of this, if there is an economic impact from this outbreak, then that's going to hurt Trump. Because as I said in the story, I believe that President Trump has foolishly tied himself to one number in America, and that's the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which by itself is very one-dimensional, doesn't really cover the full economy, what's really happening. I mean, there's a lot of good news in America. Unemployment rate has plummeted, especially among minority groups. But the stock market is a bubble. It is going to correct at some point. If this pandemic accelerates that correction, then that will be used to hammer Trump, and people might start to lose faith in the Trump administration if he can't keep that stock market sky high all the way through November. So there, maybe these are a wash. Maybe these risks balance each other out. It's hard to say, but I think we have to be asking right now, and you know, here on your show, this is the first time we're talking about it publicly on any broadcast, how will this impact the election? And there were 26 Democrat senators who wrote a letter to President Trump, an urgent letter, I think just 2 days ago, saying that they need more funding to combat this virus. So far, President Trump has really not done much about this, and I think he needs to get out in front of this very quickly. He has ordered the research, as you know, to find out if this was genetically engineered. We already know that's the case. We don't know if the government's going to cover that up. At least Trump is doing something, but he needs to get out in front of this and say to the American people, it's not a bad idea to get prepared. It's not a bad idea to think about maybe you have to keep your kids home from school if there's an outbreak in your community. You know, but so far he's not doing any of that. I think he doesn't want to cause panic. So we're still far away from the election. We're going to see how this plays out. By the way, 355 people now confirmed infected on the Diamond Princess cruise ship. Now think about this. They're getting infected because they're sharing the same air on that ship. It's not a level 4 biohazard quarantine center. It's a floating clinic now, basically. People keep getting infected. And here's a problem, Alex. They're going to release people from that quarantine on February 19th in 3 days. They're going to release people who do not yet show signs. Well, what if that person got infected today or tomorrow? They would only be in day 2 or day 3 of the incubation period. They would have full-blown symptoms maybe 2 weeks later, but they're going to be released on February 19th. Some of them are Americans, and they're choosing to fly back on commercial airlines in first-class seats rather than take the evacuation flights that are currently being chartered by the United States government. The evacuation participants will suffer another quarantine in the United States 14 more days after they come back, at least according to early reports. But these other people who are released on February 19th, they will have no quarantine. They will be able to fly commercially and come back to U.S. airports and go back to their homes in U.S. cities all across the country with no monitoring until they start to show symptoms. So I think this is a critical mistake. This is how these things happen. Bad mistakes. The CDC has already screwed up once. They sent a quarantine person home, accidentally realized that they should have been back in the quarantine center. There was a lab mix-up. You know, you covered that, I think, earlier in the week. And then they had to come back into the quarantine. So we're starting to see mistakes being made, not even to cover deliberate cover-ups that may be taking place, but just mistakes will cause this to spread everywhere.
I can't imagine a better example of the absolute madness of this open borders mindset of the political left than this coronavirus outbreak and the potential for creating a pandemic across our country. and around the world, of course. These people pouring across the border without any checks and flocking into our country and infecting many, many more people will make this virtually impossible to stop if it becomes a pandemic situation. And make no mistake about it, open borders is not about being compassionate and keeping families together. They've already found that a good 30% of the people they check, these children coming across, are not related to the people bringing them across, the human traffickers. This is to provide fodder votes for the political left, most specifically the Democratic Party. And these people are voting. Non-citizens are voting. It's been widely reported. The political government watchdog group, Judicial Watch, I've talked about their reporting, stating that they estimate, citing a prominent university study, that 1.2 million non-citizens voted, and you know they voted for the Democratic Party, in the Democratic Party candidates in the 2016 election, and some 900,000 were estimated to have voted in the 2018 election. That's why these people are wanted here. That's why they want to throw the borders open and bring these people in. And what's going to happen if we have a widespread outbreak south of the border and these people are coming through is rather frightening to contemplate. Now, regarding the Diamond Princess cruise ship they were talking about, apparently these people who were considered to be free of infection were released on the 19th of February. An article in the USA Today yesterday, February 21, stated that 18 Americans who had previously been on board Princess Cruises' Diamond Princess are infected with coronavirus. 11 of them are hospitalized in Nebraska. 5 are under quarantine in Texas, as are another 2 in California, according to Dr. Nancy Messonnier, director of the Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. And she was speaking at on behalf of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the U.S. government entity there. We'll have to see how this all plays out. There's a lot of speculation there. As far as how it could affect the elections, well, we'd have to see whether or not this develops into a pandemic situation for it to have a significant effect, I would think. But in the next few months, there are going to be a lot of developments with this disease. It behooves all of us who are concerned about our health and safety, and those are the ones we love, to keep an eye on all this stuff and start looking at preparations. I noticed that the website for Mr. Adams there, naturalnews.com, is currently offering a coronavirus-type infection kit for about $150. Not cheap, but how much is your life worth? Something to think about, at least, if it gets to a point where you were going to need stuff like this. Well, that's it for another show. Hope you found the material we presented of value. Look for us 2 weeks again from today in this same time slot. Have a good evening and rest of your weekend.